The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Joining us now, the author of Ramadi, the firsthand story of U.S. Marines in Iraq's deadliest city, Major Scott Husing. How are you, sir?
Hey, good morning, Doc. How are you?
Doing well. Is that right, Husing? Did I say it right?
Yeah, Scott Husing.
Okay, very good.
Echo in Ramadi. Yep.
So tell us a little bit about the Marines in Ramadi. Tell me what happened. You were obviously a part of that.
Yeah, so Echo in Ramadi is a story about Echo Company, 2nd Battalion, 4th Marines, and we were deployed to fight in the deadly city of Iraq in 2006 during the Second Battle of Ramadi. And we were part of the surge that everyone remembers President George W. Bush and General David Petraeus ordered. And as part of the 15th Marine Expeditionary Unit, 2,500 Marines and sailors were added to flood the battle space to those hot pockets of resistance to hammer down the insurgency.
And you were part of it, right?
Yeah, I was the company commander for a company of over 250 Marines and soldiers and sailors.
Tell us about what it was like to be there and be a part of that.
Well, a lot of people ask me, you know, why I chose to write this story. Why'd you write Echo in Ramadi? And you had a career, you know, I had a career of over 24 years in the Marine Corps, but I think at that time, absolutely as a captain and being a company commander, it probably was the pinnacle of my career, Doc, to lead some of the best men I've ever known and ever fought alongside with in that city. And although it was some of the most dangerous and deadly fighting and some of the bloodiest battles of this long war, not diminishing the other battles that we've seen in the Fallujahs and Baghdads, but these young men, no more than, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old, the way they performed on a daily basis when I tasked them to do these superhuman acts in the face of great danger with uncertainty and this constant pressure all around them and the daily friction and the life and death decisions they had to make was something that I really didn't understand until I wrote the book, Echo in Ramadi, because I did 75 interviews with my Marines and the families that supported us while we fought and the ones that still support us this day. And I was tasking them to do these things, and I didn't really see the 20-year-old kid. What I saw was sergeant, and I saw corporal. And every time I challenged them and tasked them to do things, they never hesitated, and they always did it with extreme lethality, constantly you know, pursuing the enemy in an environment, in urban combat, where in this asymmetric war, Doc, the front line is literally everywhere. I mean, we lived in the city amongst the people. So it was a very complex environment and very fluid for these young guys to make these decisions. So in addition to all of the fighting and the explosions and navigating roads that were laden with roadside bombs, they had to clear massive sectors of the city, living in the houses and interacting with the locals. So the culture was something that I think they understood better than other generations who have fought in previous wars. And that's not just my opinion. When I talk to my Vietnam vets and I talk to Korean War vets, our military and my Marines from Echo Company had a really good understanding of that through their training and through, I think, the new generation that are in the military today. And they're just the best our nation has to offer.
So how secure was Ramadi at that point, after you went in? How secure? I mean, it was pretty secure, right?
It was not secure. It had gotten worse than it had ever been, and that was validated by the fact that 2nd Battalion, 4th Marines fought in the First Battle of Ramadi in 2004, and I was very lucky to have about 50 seasoned combat vets in my company that remarked to me that the city had gotten even worse. And it's like this giant game of whack-a-mole, Doc. You know, the insurgents would pop up in one city, the coalition forces and U.S. military, we'd hammer them back down on the ground. And in 2006, Ramadi was the city where they chose to stand and fight. And it was about 10%. 90% of the people were there in the city. They lived there. They wanted stability. They wanted peace. But you had about 5% hardcore fighters that were very well trained, and probably another 5% of co-belligerents that probably want to make a name for themselves. And I tell you, when they tried to do that in 06 and they stood up against the U.S. Marines and the Army under the 1st Brigade Combat Team that we fought alongside, they lost. And we were continually knocking them back on their heels because the Marines attacked and fought with this their natural aggressive mindset and just this relentless attitude. And I will say this, the city was not secure. I mean, there was literally no cars on the street. No one was out after curfew. The rules of engagement were extremely permissive, meaning if there was someone in that city at that time, they were assumed to be a bad guy, and they were going to have a bad day if they ran into the Marines out on patrol. After the fight, though, I think it's safe to say that, we won. So I get asked that a lot, did we win or lose? And we never had a metric or a bumper sticker saying, hey, do this and you win. But if it was killing bad guys, absolutely, we did our share of that. But the city became more secure and we won. And then we gave that back to Iraq after we left. And I validated this just talking on the phone with the operations officer from the task force. You know, they were literally opening markets up and vehicles on the streets of Ramadi, and the place had become better than I think from a operational level standpoint or strategic level standpoint. We gave it back to the Iraqis and then they punted it through the grandstands of life. And I think we turned back our clock, 3 years ago in May of 2015, when ISIS reared its ugly head, we saw what happened because we didn't establish a physical presence in there. We didn't apply the lessons learned from history from World War II and the Pacific Theater in Europe to Vietnam, and we gave it back. And
well, we stopped early
again in 2015.
We stopped early the first run when we went into Iraq. I mean, that's why we had to bring you back for the shock and awe treatment, right? Because we let it become whack-a-mole instead of doing the job completely.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying. At one point, it was more secure, but then it got worse.
Yeah, it is. It's this frustratingly vicious yes. sine wave that goes up and down. And the U.S. presence over there has never really figured out where the median line falls. And again, in the news today, we're looking at dumping more money back into Iraq to help them fix their country. But, I just wrote an op-ed piece, a couple days ago that, I had to voice my concerns with that because I don't think that they have a very good track record of being good stewards of that money, nor are they willing to embrace this forward progress. And I'm not saying we should impose American culture on a 5,000-year culture of the Middle East. That's just American hubris. What we should be doing is figuring out how to help them do it.
So I remember talking with Jason Buttrell, one of our researchers here for the Glenn Beck program, and he had talked about, and I think it was around Ramadi, where they had set up basically tunnels and they could pop up all over the place. And they tried to target, one area where they popped up and would, stand and fight. And then as soon as you targeted it, they'd be off in some other area of the city. Was that Ramadi area?
Yeah, I think every city experienced that to a degree. But when you're fighting an ununiformed, faceless enemy that blends in with the civilian population, it makes it very challenging as a commander and as a young Marine or soldier to identify who the enemy is, because they're very adept at blending in with the local population. We went through literally clearing house to house and engaging the enemy in direct contact. We were fighting 2, 3, 4 times a day, and it wasn't a matter of if we were going to fight, it was when and how often. That's just how kinetic the fighting was at that time. And it wasn't just our company. And I tell anybody that asks, I never presupposed that we were the biggest, baddest company of Marines to ever walk the face of the battlefield, Doc. There were plenty of others that fought just as hard, that lost more, that sacrificed as much. But what we did and what I write about in Echo and Ramadi is really emblematic of what all of the soldiers and all of the Marines experienced in that city during that time. And that's what the book is about. And it's obviously about the fighting and the friction and that chaos and all that pressure. But, I think it's important, too, when I'm talking about this story, is it's also about the families and it's about the people. It's not this battlefield chronology of hitting the beach at L hour and attacking north and flanking. It's about emotion and that's really what sets this book apart. It's not just another war story. I think it's so important for those who are not around military bases or those that don't have a military background, people from the Midwest, like in Ohio, like, you know, your home state and others that can relate to this or want to get a better understanding of that real raw emotion and that feeling that these people experienced. And that's what I've tried to do in this book. And the endorsements and the feedback I'm getting from everybody has just been very overwhelming, and I'm honored to write the story to honor the spirit and sacrifices of the Marines and the soldiers and the families that supported us while we fought, and our amazing Gold Star families that continue to support us to this day. I just am never amazed at how strong they are to continue to, you know, carry the torch to bring light to us, because, you know, we lost our brothers, you know, during that war, but they lost a son or they lost a daughter, and it's just an amazing group of people, and I always want to say thank you to them.
So I believe you, and I would like to know that, you know, when have you signed the movie deal yet?
Yeah, because this sounds amazing movie material.
No, we launched the book 2 days ago, and
okay, so what's taking so long?
Yeah, but people ask me that a lot, you know, hey, when's the movie gonna, I think because it's my story, I've never had this grand cinematic vision, because what was more important to me was telling the story and making sure that the Battle of Ramadi didn't fall into the shadows of Fallujah or Baghdad or other, you know, significant battles, or in Afghanistan, the great fights that, you know, we've suffered and survived through as a military. But I think there's absolutely an amazing story there, because again, it is about the people. You know, if you want to read about events or things, you can pick up the newspaper every day, but if you want to really feel what these young men and the families that support us went through, that's really what I bring to life in Echo and Ramadi.
That's great.
The author is Echo and Ramadi, the firsthand story of U.S. Marines in Iraq's deadliest city. Major Scott Husing. What we'll do is we'll tweet out a link to it and post it so people can find out. Do you have social media accounts we should be aware of?
Yeah, absolutely. You can follow me on Facebook at Echo and Ramadi, on Twitter at Echo and Ramadi, Instagram at Echo and Ramadi. And if there's, I know you guys are down south, but I'm in D.C. If people have their copy and they want to get a signed copy, I'll be at the CPAC convention at the Gaylord Hotel today, 11 to 12. And then tomorrow, I'll be back at CPAC on Friday from 10 to 2 on Radio Row. You can check in there. Bring your book by. Go buy a copy. And I'd love to sign it for anyone that shows up and tracks me down. It's always my pleasure.
That's always great to hear from you, sir. And good luck with the book and, I'm sure, a movie.
Hey, Doc, thanks so much. I appreciate the support, brother, and glad to be on the program.
Have a good day. Good guy. Okay. That's really interesting stuff. And that's the reason I was trying to get at, too, that it's got to be frustrating. You've done some good. Oh. You've secured parts of the city, and then to find out we made some bundles, some bungles. We've screwed some things up, and then you have to go back and do it.
They've bundled and bungled that from the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's so frustrating. And these guys... He is not going to, you know, say too much,
right?
Against
some
that.
Critical things,
yeah.
Right.
But I mean, they've look. There's been plenty of evidence showing that even from the beginning, Tommy Frank stopped early, playing the political game on the first run, and then the rest of them all just played. You know, we'll do a little bit here and a little bit there, and we'll play nice, and they'll come along and. And even this man said, no, they don't come along.
I've got to believe
they haven't come along at all.
For a soldier, one of the most frustrating things has to be we put our life on the line, we took fire, we were in battle, we did our job, maybe had losses, and we secured this area. Now we have to try to secure that same area again, right?
Oh,
that would be maddening to me. I would just... freak out.
Knowledge is power. Tweet at us with the hashtag What I Learned Today. This is the Morning Blaze with Doc Thompson on the Blaze Radio Network.